tuned in to the Andrew Lawton Show.
As I mentioned, we're flirting with the boundaries of time and space, if not outright pushing them. But we are still going to keep with a tradition as, well, that's what we do here on the Andrew Lawton Show anyway, or so I've declared just now. And on the Monday shows, we always check in with our very good friend, Chris Sims, who is the Alberta Director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. And Chris, it is always, always wonderful to talk to you. This is, I mean, you and I, the carbon tax is the gift that keeps on giving, not for Canadian taxpayers, but certainly for shows that try to respect the Canadian taxpayers. This report came out late last week that the Parliamentary Budget Office, as I understand, has confirmed, I mean, I think you could probably intuit this, but they've confirmed that it will cost Canadians $500 million this year. That's not the carbon tax, that's the GST. On the carbon tax. I feel like I'm misreading that number, but that's the $500 million a year just on the tax on the tax.
That's correct. And there's certain evergreen things that we get through email at the Taxpayers Federation. Most of it is about accountability or somebody personally, you know, struggling with their tax load. But one of the frequent flyers is, oh my goodness, I'm paying a tax on the tax. Yes, you are. So it's quite easy to see on your home heating bill, for example, or if you get propane tanks filled up outside of your trailer, if you live in a mobile home, take a look at the receipt. The sales tax, the GST, is added after the carbon tax. That means that the GST is on top of the carbon tax in addition to. And so we've been preaching and teaching about this now for years, but it feels really validating to have the Parliamentary Budget Office, which is an arm's length, independent, nonpartisan group that is supposed to watchdog the government, saying, yes, Canadians are spending close to $500 million per year with the GST on the carbon tax. And by the year 2030, Andrew, this made my eyes pop out. It's going to be around $1 billion a year.
Wow. I mean, the idea of a tax on a tax is incredibly offensive, because the point of a sales tax, if we're going to endorse that that's a legitimate revenue collection tool for government, is that it is taxing a good or a service, of which a tax is neither. So to tax a tax undermines it. I mean, just go back to in Ontario, where I'm from, before we had the harmonized sales tax, you had a PST, which was the Ontario sales tax of 8%. And then you had the GST, which for a time was 7%. Imagine if they did not apply those taxes simultaneously. They put the GST on, so your $100 purchase is now $105, and then they put the PST on top of that. So now you're paying 8% on the 105 instead of 8% on the 100. People would be outraged about that. On the carbon tax, I think the government's trying to just conceal this from people because there is no real justification for it.
Yes, exactly. To really put it like, okay, if I bought this piece, this roll of tape, okay, at the store, I pay, not in Alberta, I don't pay a provincial sales tax, but I pay 5% federal sales tax because this is an object in time and space.
Yeah. And at, so if that was $1, purchase, you pay $1.05 because of that 5% GST.
Correct. Yeah. But a tax is just this amorphous, blood-sucking action of government. And they're now taxing you on that tax. In fact, a lot of people ask us, isn't this illegal? It sure feels illegal. It sure feels unfair and unconstitutional. I personally would love to see a clear declaration or a ruling coming from a high court somewhere saying you cannot tax on a tax. I think what they're trying to get around here is that the government tries to call this a carbon pricing mechanism or a pollution reduction mechanism. We had part of that fight at the Supreme Court a few months ago. Is this really a tax? Well, anybody who's paying the carbon tax certainly knows that this is a tax. And now, again, having the PBO come out and say in cold dollars and cents, this is how much people are paying, this should have people outraged. They should be emailing their member of parliament, phoning their member of parliament, saying, how dare you be fleecing us for an extra $500 million per year so you can go waste it on some nonsense like hockey rinks or overseas trips on a tax? It's gross. And so people should definitely speak up. I find right now that the opposition is very susceptible and very open to listening to people when it comes to affordability and tax ripoffs. So now is the time to get your opposition MPs up in arms over this stuff, to make them commit to scrapping this stuff once they're in government, if they become government.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is an explicit tax on a tax here, but there's also a more hidden and admittedly more oblique tax on a tax, because the whole point of the carbon tax is that it increases the price of everything. There are a lot of down market carbon taxes that are baked in. So, for example, if you buy an orange from the grocery store that had to be shipped there, and the vessel and the truck that had to ship you those oranges, they had to pay more in fuel, that carbon tax that they paid is buried in the apple, driving up that price. And then again, the sales tax on that increased price. So the point of that is not to just confuse people, but to say it compounds. I mean, at every level of the supply chain that has a carbon tax that it has to pay, that's all getting passed to the consumer. And then the sales tax is getting put on all of that.
Yes, exactly. As Andrew just explained, folks, picture it in your mind.
Grocery costs, I realize, aren't always sales tax, but the point stands generally.
Oh, for sure, because you've baked in the carbon tax there, for sure. So, like picture an apple coming from the Okanagan of British Columbia, okay? Picture that person who has to drive there when they're picking it, paying the carbon tax. And now keep in mind that quite often we'll use barns, right? If you're a farmer, say you've got a poultry barn or a pork barn, farmers right now still need to pay the carbon tax on their barn heating, and they have to pay it for drying their grain. What eats grain? Well, everything, okay? There's the baseline of your food chain where the carbon tax kicks in, and now you add the trucking to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Now add the natural gas to keep the lights on and the heat running or the air conditioning running at the grocery store. Now add the carbon tax of driving there. And that's not even including trains. A lot of people forget that our trains, which haul so many things across our country, use diesel for locomotive fuel. That is also carbon taxed. So this is where you're getting this layer cake from hell when it comes to the carbon tax. And so this is why it's really important that the Parliamentary Budget Officer has done two very good things mathematically here. Again, the CTF has been sounding the alarm for years, but coming from an independent watchdog like this is so valuable. Even with the rebates factored in, the average family in Alberta for the year 2024 is going to be out more than $900 this year. Net. That is net. And that is relating to everything Andrew and I just described, of all that layer cake coming from the carbon tax and applying it to the average family in Alberta, you're out almost $1,000. And again, that's with those rebates factored in. The very idea that we could give money to the government and they could magically somehow increase its wealth and make it worth more and give more back than you pay in is nonsense. But to have the PBO do these two things of pointing out the net cost of the carbon tax and the GST ripoff on top of the carbon tax is really important. And in fact, we'd like to see all parties get on board with this. A little note, we're noticing some movement at the provincial level from the NDP. We're seeing, for example, in Saskatchewan, the opposition NDP saying, you know what, we shouldn't be carbon taxed on our home heating. We're seeing Wab Kanew, the NDP premier of Manitoba, saying very similar things and fully suspending his provincial fuel tax.
Look, when the government's carve out for Atlantic Canada was one of its biggest tactical blunders, because they had basically beaten the provinces into submission on the carbon tax. And then when they did that, all of a sudden, everyone who had an NDP government in Manitoba and even, you know, NDP leaners in Alberta, Saskatchewan were looking at their leaders being like, whoa, hold up. Why do they get a pass on this?
Jack Layton, the late leader of the federal NDP, said it would be wrong to punish people with a carbon tax on their home heating fuel. Mm-hmm. Folks should go back and read that, including sitting members of parliament within the NDP who are propping up this government and supporting home heating fuel carbon taxes.
I wanted to turn to a bit of a better story here. I began the show talking about this climate change free speech trial I'm covering in Washington, D.C. this week. But we have this vilification of the oil and gas sector by a lot of sectors of the Canadian political establishment, certainly by the federal government and by many in the media. Well, it was a bit refreshing for Alberta Premier Danielle Smith to declare that she wanted to double oil production in Alberta. She She did this in her sit down with Tucker Carlson last week. I think it was in Edmonton. It might have been in Calgary, or it might have been both, for all I know. But really, really bold plan here. Now, first off, can the premier make that commitment?
Sure, if she wants to. So the government doesn't, you know, we don't have crown corporations that are solely monopolistically pulling oil out of the ground or mining it as bitumen. But
if so, it would never make it out.
Could you imagine? You know, forget it. They would get into squabbles and it wouldn't work. So she can declare this as a goal and say that's what she wants to see and encourage private companies to just go for it here. The problem here, though, is how much of an obstacle is the federal government going to make of itself? We've already seen that the government fully thinks that they have full control over natural resources in Alberta, and we're just supposed to bow to their bidding. Spoiler alert, that's not true. And we recently had a great Supreme Court decision on the pipelines issue there, too. It was in Alberta's favor. So for her to say that is great. And it also inspires confidence in companies because, of course, they want to come here and then do business. Or if they're already here, they want to realize that they have a pro-business premier and they want to do more business. Again, though, the devil's always in the details. Can we actually get this happening without the federal government trying to strangle us? What I just like from a tactical point of view is how much attention that gets. So for her to sit there with somebody with the reach of Tucker Carlson and obviously triggering the reactions of some members of parliament and ministers in the federal government to the point where they have to hold a press conference. I actually heard, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, Andrew, I actually heard it was an NDP strategist say that he should have been stopped at the border, like prevented from coming into Canada. Like, whoa.
Yeah, that's so, well, it's the Emergencies Act approach, basically, of just we don't like what they're going to say. So let's just use these weird legal tools to prevent them from saying it.
But just use a thought process experiment here. Imagine Rachel Notley is still leader of the NDP. Imagine she invites MSNBC's Rachel Maddow up to Alberta, and they have a talk, and there's people that come to the arena and they listen to, I don't know, solar blenders and e-bikes and whatever it is they want to talk about. Can you imagine, like, people saying she should be stopped at the border? Like, I don't care if you agree with the person saying, that's the whole point of free expression. But to say somebody should be stopped at the border really opened my eyes quite a bit. So I think this is part of the reason why Premier Smith made that statement. Was to say,
I'm inclined to agree. And look, when I was in Davos, not this year, but last year, I ran into Joe Manchin, who's a senator who is a Democrat in West Virginia, but he's the most right-leaning Democrat, certainly on energy issues. He was one, Jason Kenney brought him up to tour the oil sands. And I had spoken about that. And he was saying, Senator Manchin, like, yeah, you know, I would love it if the United States were saying we want to buy all this Canadian oil. So that's the real danger here, is that you have a premier, Danielle Smith, who's saying, yes, let's get it to market. You've got buyers out there, but you have these, I mean, to appropriate Paul Liev's term, these gatekeepers, both at the Canadian government federally, the provincial government in BC and provincial government in Quebec, that are doing everything they can to landlock Canadian energy.
They are. And for the folks who are watching this for whom emissions is their key issue, like it keeps them up at night, this is actually one of the best paths to reducing global emissions. So the United States of America reduced its emissions without carbon taxes. They did so largely by expanding natural gas production, which has far fewer emissions than other forms of fuel. And again, this is something Premier Smith has said independently. This is something other political leaders have said independently. Places like India are desperately asking to purchase our natural gas. And that will also have the great benefit of reducing their very heavy global emissions. So this is the non-carbon tax path forward to doing that exactly. And as a great side bonus, you're employing lots of Canadians under very strong labor laws and very strong environmental laws. So it was really interesting to see her smile and say, yeah, let's double the production. I think she was trying to provoke a little bit more conversation there.
Yeah, fair enough. And she certainly did it. I mean, all of the people that were, you know, clutching their pearls about how dare she take the stage with a guy that filled out two stadia there was actually like they weren't even debating and discussing the things that she was saying there, because I think there was nothing uncontroversial. And if you're in Alberta and your lifeblood is the thriving of that sector, absolutely. You're like, yeah, come on, I'm all in on this. So, all right. Well, great to talk to you as always, Chris Sims. We will check in with you next week, but my pleasure. Thank you.
Have fun.
Thanks for listening to The Andrew Lawton Show. Support the program by donating to True North at www.tnc.news.